This is Kip Allen, KFUO Radio, and we are having a roundtable discussion today that will go into the ramifications of the Supreme Court ruling regarding gay marriage. I'm the host today, and with me is Craig D'Onofrio in the studio, the Pastor Craig D'Onofrio, who will be able to handle some of the theological aspects of the ruling. Also on the line will be Rob Doherty, who is an attorney in Arizona. He was the one who represented the Elaine photography case where a photographer had refused to participate in a gay marriage to photograph it for them. And also we have President Matthew Harrison of the Missouri Synod, who will tell us what the official position is. Good day to everyone.
Hi, Kip.
Good morning, Kip. Rob Doherty here. I'm actually in Albuquerque, not in New Mexico, as opposed to Arizona.
I should know that. I've spent some time on New Mexico. President Harrison, the ruling came down on Friday. This will have enormous implications for the Missouri Synod. We, obviously, Scripture says we cannot recognize gay marriage. Where do we go from here, sir?
Well, it came as no surprise. When it came out, it was very sobering, but came as no surprise. We knew that Kennedy would be the swing vote, and he had a long track record on this issue, and there was every indication that he wanted to go down in history as the operative judge in changing the culture radically on this question. So, we've had, the church has had its position for 2,000 years, and prior to the church, the ancient Hebrew community had its position, and the Lord has created us in an ordered fashion, male and female. He created them and puts us together in marriage, as Jesus teaches in Matthew 19. None of that changes whatsoever. It'll be very difficult going on the political side. The generation, especially the millennial generation, has been awash in a culture that has pushed and advocated and painted homosexuality in the best possible light their entire lives. And the left has wisely and very adeptly painted the issue as one between a choice between love and bigotry. I'm reminded, frankly, of World War II and Hermann Zassa, just as Hitler was elected before he became chancellor. He was elected in 1932, and Zassa wrote a stunning piece rejecting the Aryan paragraph of the Nazi Party platform, which said religion will be allowed as long as it does not insult the German Aryan moral sensibility. And Zassa responded by saying that the doctrine of original sin condemns the best, purest, moral Aryan no less than the worst half-caste gypsy. And then he went on to say, we don't much care if the government supports us. What we do care about is whether the government will allow us to continue to preach the gospel, which we, by all means, will continue to do no matter what. In this case, you have a dramatic rejection of natural law as understood by our founders, of natural law understood by the Bible, which is consistent with the Ten Commandments. And we will continue to be who we are. We will preach repentance to all. Homosexuality is no more of a sin than the sins that we all commit and are all guilty of. We'll preach repentance to all. We will love all. We will respect all. We'll have respect the human rights and dignity of all people. The big question for us now is, and it's already happening, we find that those with a view of marriage, which is God's view of marriage and that of natural law, are progressively being driven out of the public partnership and the public square. This has already happened in Illinois, where they passed draconian legislation saying already several years ago that no adoption agency, which is unwilling to place children in gay and lesbian homes, can partner with the state. And not only that, you can't even set up an agency that doesn't take funds and do it independently. They won't even allow a license. Our military chaplains are already being harassed, and there will be a ceiling for their promotion, and they're being ridiculed already in the Pentagon for having traditional religious views. There will be now a rash of court cases similar to Roe v. Wade, which will attempt to define the limits of religious freedom. We could face a situation where Christian colleges are removed from access to federal student loan programs, which will virtually end them. So it's going to be an interesting road ahead, but we are strangers here. Heaven is our home, and we're made for this. This is nothing strange in the church's life, and we're here for this moment to put forth a vision of truth against a lie.
Thank you, President Harrison. Craig, you have something that you wanted to add?
Yeah, actually, I want to ask President Harrison, or at least make a statement and ask for your response to this. For, 1,700 years or so, the church has functioned in some places with tax exemption and other places without, and yet the church has managed to thrive. Are we going to have to get used to the idea that things might change with our tax status, but find comfort in knowing that the gates of hell will not prevail against the church and against the gospel? And perhaps our clergy and other church workers are going to have to be worker priests more. Is this in the offing, do you think?
Yes, certainly. The demographics are pushing, and the cultural situation is pushing in that direction. There's no doubt about it. So with the intensity, there will be many who will fall away, and the faith of many will grow cold. We're told in the scriptures that that will happen. At the same time, there will be fidelity. There will be suffering for the truth, and losing your tax exemption, that'll be challenging, but it'll be a pretty minor suffering. I suspect we might go through a number of years, and that eventuality may not happen in our lifetimes, or as quick as things have gone in recent years over this sexuality decision. It could happen very quickly, and make no mistake, and those things that I talked about earlier, there are people that are working these plans right now and working toward these ends, and they have been successful at this point with the Supreme Court decision. So they're just, they've been handed a huge victory. Folks in the military say that basically the military has been holding back somewhat, waiting for this decision. Now the floodgates are going to open. So we can survive. We survived quite well and thrived in the three centuries of persecution before Constantine, and we survived quite well. The church was damaged in many respects by preferential treatment by the state. So the Lord's will be done. At the same time, as the challenges continue to increase here, the church is doing extremely well in the global south, particularly China, Southeast Asia, and especially Africa. And that will continue to happen.
President Harrison, you mentioned about there are continuing lawsuits, or the other side has gotten a major victory now, and they're not going to stop. Now, one of the soldiers on our side who has been in the forefront of this is Rob Doherty, who's on the line with us right now, who's been fighting the good fight. Rob, I'd like to ask you, what do you see happening from this point? The other side seems to be organized and extremely aggressive. What's going to happen?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think the same sex marriage communications department, I guess, for lack of a better word, has done a really good job on framing this issue about love and commitment, and that, you know, same-sex couples can show the same love and commitment. Why aren't they entitled to be married? That's not what this case is about. I've thoroughly read the opinion. That's not really what this is about. But that's the agenda they are pushing. And I think we as Christians are going to have a hard time coming up with what message are we pushing. And I think President Harrison nailed it just right on the head, right at the beginning. We need to look at this from a natural law perspective. I mean, what has, from day one, we've had marriage instituted even before the fall into sin. And natural law is something that is across all religions. And marriage between one man and one woman has been in existence from, creation. And I think the message, that's what we've got to get away from, this talk about marriage being solely about love and commitment. Because when we start talking that way, we fall into this trap that, well, you think that only a man and a woman can have a loving and committed marriage, but same-sex couples can as well. And that's why we've got to get out of that argument and take it into more what is marriage. Marriage unites two people in both their minds and the bodies, and we have to stay into the argument that this unity in marriage is found physically at the point of this, quite openly speaking here, of the differences in our bodies, male and female, and that the man, with man's sexual organs and then the women's different sexual organs, that this produces new life. And I think that's where the focus needs to be, back to the natural law argument, that it's not natural, has nothing to do with one's commitment to the other. It's about the unity, that we, one woman and one man become one flesh with each other, and two women cannot become one flesh, and one two men cannot be one one flesh. So I think that's the hurdle we face in the policy arguments, and taking it outside of the biblical references. But I think that's where we need to go, is focus on the natural law argument.
President Harrison, let's get back actually to basics here. What, for our non-Christian and non-Lutheran listeners, how does the Missouri Synod actually define marriage? What is our official position on marriage?
It is the recognition that belongs in the civil realm. It is the recognition that two people have publicly entered into a permanent, that is, two people, a man and a woman, have entered into a permanent contractual relationship. And when that happens through proper authority, it is a marriage. And that proper authority exists within the customs of various countries through natural law, etc. But it's a permanent, till death do us part, relationship with them, which then ideally produces children. The complementarity of male and female, which is unparalleled in any other relationship, is the greatest evidence for the way God created marriage to be. And if you have many liberals today who are not classic liberals like the founders of our country, who believed in natural law, like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. There's a God creating, and there's self-evident truth. Today's liberals, who are evolutionists, may believe, and many believe, there is no God, and that so there is no eternal truth. There is no unchanging truth. One thing that will help us in the future is that this lack of any eternal truth will allow sexual dysfunction to simply morph into the next weird thing. And we will be able along the way to argue, no, you can't. Multiple marriages are not correct. Marriages between relatives, son-daughter, or father-daughter marriages. There was a famous case developing in the East Coast in that realm. Incestual relationships, etc. Man-boy love, bestiality, all these things are possibilities if there are no eternal mores or natural law.
Craig, I noticed you've been wanting to make a comment.
Yes, actually, I'd like to throw this to both of you individually, because this is also a two-kingdom issue. And, of course, President Harrison, you operate on the side of the church and the kingdom of God. And, Rob, you operate in the civil sphere of things. I have always been uncomfortable as a pastor signing court documents to solemnize a marriage. I'm not a government official. I am a pastor of the church. On the surface, I thought, well, big deal. That means that the church will finally get out of being a functionary of the state. You can go get your whatever it is down at the courthouse, and on Sunday come to the church. We'll bless the union between man and woman, and we'll all move on. And yeah, this is just another sign of the immoral times. But it goes a lot deeper than that. Could you speak to this from the church side, President Harrison, and also Rob, from the civil side? How far does this go? I know you've mentioned some of the institutions of the church that will be deeply threatened by this.
President Harrison, would you address that first, please?
Well, I think we're going to have the debate internally about whether it is wise or to continue the current practice. The agenda that we inherit, from what I understand, kind of the Anglican practice, state church practice in America, where clergy operate as agents of the state. In Germany and other places in Europe, it has been quite different, so that a couple is married at the courthouse and then have a church blessing, a church marriage after the fact. We have that order in our agenda, as a matter of fact. And I can understand that we had the first debate on this issue in this round of conventions for the Missouri Synod. It came up in the Montana district, and it was pretty interesting to hear the floor debate, and it's just beginning among us. So we'll see where we come out on this.
Rob, what do you have to say from the civic point of view?
Yeah, and, you know, I thoroughly analyzed the opinion of the court over the weekend. You know, as you guys know, I'm very, very fascinated in these issues, and I'm not defending the majority opinion. In fact, quite the contrary. But I do want to read an interesting paragraph in the majority opinion that hopefully in the future that when these other types of issues come up about, you know, tax statuses, et cetera, we can go back and refer to the opinion of the court that just came out. Now, I'm going to read it for you right now. It says, finally, it must be emphasized that religions and those who adhere to religious doctrines may continue to advocate with utmost sincere conviction that by divine precept, same-sex marriage should not be condoned. The First Amendment ensures that religious organizations and persons are given proper protections as they seek to teach the principles that are so faithful and so central to their lives and faith, and to their own deep aspirations to continue the family structure they have long revered. The same is true of those who oppose same-sex marriage for other reasons. In turn, those who believe allowing same-sex marriage is proper, indeed essential, whether as a matter of religious conviction or secular belief, may engage those who disagree with their view in an open and searching debate. The Constitution, however, does not permit the state to bar same-sex couples from marriage on the same terms as accorded to couples of the opposite sex. Anyway, what my point is here is the court realizing that, you know, there is religious freedoms under the First Amendment. We've talked about those before, Craig and I have. That I'm hoping with that language can be used in future cases to say, hey, look, even the court in its majority opinion has said that we realize there's protections under the First Amendment on this debate, and that we can continue to have the debate, and we won't see, you know, government retaliation in the forms of tax-exempt statuses. Now, of course, Justice Chief Justice Roberts is still nervous about it. He said that that he brought that up, that, you know, there could be situations where, you know, people, hard question arise when people of faith exercise religion in ways that may be seen to conflict with the new right to same-sex marriage. When, for example, a religious college provides married student housing only to opposite-sex married couples, or a religious adoption agency declines to place children with same-sex marriages. So it says, unfortunately, we don't have the answers to those questions. What is going to happen? And people of faith can take no comfort in the treatment they receive from the majority today. So there's a it's something I think that's going to be continued to be fought in court, but I'm hopeful that with the majority opinions language that I read on the First Amendment protections, that we will be able to overcome those questions that haven't been answered.
Let me quote a couple of paragraphs from the dissent on this one. Justice Roberts also wrote, "The majority graciously suggests that religious believers may continue to advocate and teach the views of marriage. The First Amendment guarantees, however, the freedom to exercise religion. Ominously, that is not a word the majority uses."
Precisely.
Another quote I want to give is from Justice Thomas. He said, "It appears all but inevitable when the two," he's referring to spiritual marriage, religious marriage and civic marriage, "it appears inevitable that when the two come into conflict, particularly as individuals and churches are confronted by demands to participate and endorse civil marriages between same-sex couples." He's calling it inevitable. We're going to have another further challenge, even though many of the gay rights advocates have been saying, oh no, the churches are exempt under the First Amendment. We can't force that. We won't do that. Well, obviously, I think Justice Thomas doesn't believe him. Pastor Harrison, do you have a question? Comment on that?
I think you're exactly right. I don't think I respect the opinions of the counselor very much, but I think, as the minority has stated, there is little or no consolation from the opinion precisely for this issue. The Constitution, what the current administration has done, is put the ethic, the sacred cow ethic in America of sexual freedom over free exercise, which is actually mentioned in the Bill of Rights. So in the whole HHS mandate debacle a couple of years ago, you know, the Health and Human Services tried to say we allow for religious rights, and they defined the rights of religious rights not as free exercise, but as free association and the freedom to assemble. Well, the free exercise right is much, much broader. We can take no consolation in the culture in which anybody with a traditional view is drummed out, virtually drummed out of entertainment, drummed out of big business. We've seen cases like this, and now agencies have been and are being drummed out, separated from the church over issues of gay adoption. We can take no consolation whatsoever. The future will be determined by one libertarian, liberal Catholic justice on the bench. And there is simply no cause for consolation.
Craig, you have a comment?
1984, the Grove City College versus Bell was found in the Supreme Court to be under Title IX, which says that there can be no discrimination or a college or university will lose all federal funding. And out of this, Grove City, and I don't know if Hillsdale was already not accepting college or federal funding, including loans. But for these colleges, it seemed to kind of work out okay. Does it look like we might have to look into just a rejection of federal money and state money altogether in our colleges and universities, or is that still somewhere down the road? But I just fear under Title IX and the way that it's been interpreted with this Grove City Act with Ted Kennedy, that we're heading in that direction now with sexuality, not just with a boys' baseball team being funded more than a girls' softball team, which is what that was all about. Any thoughts on that, Rob? Or Pastor Harrison?
Well, Craig,
it's going to be the federal student loan program. So,
I'm sorry, one more time, President Harrison?
Yeah, the big issue is going to be the federal student loan program. That's all I wanted to say.
Rob, any thoughts?
Yeah, let's go back to the Lane photography case here in New Mexico. We're all aware of that one. That's the one where our local photographer refused to photograph a same-sex marriage and was sued under New Mexico's Human Rights Act. Now, remember, as I explained to you before, Craig, and your listeners have heard this, that New Mexico had adopted in its Human Rights Act that homosexuality is a protected class in New Mexico, meaning on the same status as a race, religion, age discrimination. So that was done in New Mexico. That's why the New Mexico Supreme Court ruled that. I would argue now with this case, the new Supreme Court case that just came down on same-sex marriage, that now our Supreme Court is almost looking at homosexuality and same-sex marriages as a protected class under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So I think it is going to be an issue that we've got to deal with. We've got, you can't, in a college dorm room or such, you can't say, you can't live in here because of same-sex marriage. I do think we're going to have very much difficulties on defending that in that realm based on the fact I do believe now in the federal law that homosexuals and same-sex married couples are a protected class.
Rob, President Harrison, we've got to take a little break right now, and thank you for our conversation here, and we'll continue it after this bridge.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The Wisconsin State Senate passed a law prohibiting abortion after 20 weeks because the baby can clearly feel the pain of this brutal procedure to kill her. So who was opposing this law, supported by a majority of women and Wisconsin citizens? All the regulars, of course. It's said you can tell a person by the company he keeps. Well, the radical pro-abortion organizations of NOW and NAREL teamed up with the International Socialist Organization to march against this life-saving legislation. Yes, you heard me right. The pro-abortion groups are partnering with a communist faction. You see, only radical fringe elements of society oppose this bill, and Wisconsin citizens got to see them marching against it in a pro-death parade. God bless the Wisconsin State Legislature.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
In Mark chapter 6, Jesus marvels at the unbelief of his hometown, and the gospel writer says that they took offense at him. Was Jesus' ministry a success? Live Monday on Issues Etc., we'll look forward to Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. We are excited to walk alongside Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members and ministries as they witness and perform works of mercy and compassion around the world. Investments with LCEF provide the exceptional financial resources used daily to build faith communities and serve God's people. Our loans and ministry support services are available to LCMS congregations, schools, and organizations, as well as rostered church workers. Visit LCEF today.
It's okay if you miss a program on Worldwide KFUO because you can download them as a podcast at your convenience. There are so many programs at Worldwide KFUO that are centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. Don't miss one of them. You can download one or all at kfuo.org or subscribe on iTunes. That's kfuo.org, the messenger of good news.
The Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services is reminding parents to make sure their child's immunizations are up to date. Missouri law requires that children kindergarten through 12th grade receive immunizations to protect against vaccine-preventable diseases. This helps protect everyone, children, teachers, staff, and the community as a whole.
Talk to your health care provider to ensure your child is immunized before school starts. This message is brought to you by the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
The world is the mission field of Worldwide KFUO. We bring the gospel of Christ to all nations. Worldwide KFUO reaches countries where missionaries on the ground can't go. Christ called us to proclaim the gospel to all nations. And that's what we do here every day at Worldwide KFUO. If our mission and worldwide outreach is important to you, would you please prayerfully consider supporting Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
You're listening to a special program here on Worldwide KFUO. It is a roundtable discussion concerning the Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage. I'm Kip Allen. With me is Pastor Craig D'Onofrio. And on the line, we also have Rob Doty, who is an attorney in New Mexico who has handled a number of issues in this. We do invite our listeners to call in. North America, we have an 800 number, 1-800-730-2727. Once again, that's 1-800-730-2727. In the St. Louis area, that's area code 314. That would be 821-0850. That's area code 314-821-0850. President Matt Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod had been with us, but his duties unfortunately have pulled him away, and we want to thank him very much for giving us the time that he has. Craig, where do we go from here? Actually, there's one thing I want to raise first. We were talking about the implications here, and there is a about the, for example, using it to vilify and to silence. There is a dissenting paragraph here from Justice Alito, and I'm going to quote it here. It says, the ruling will be used to vilify Americans who are unwilling to assent to the new orthodoxy. In the course of its opinion, the majority compares traditional marriage laws to laws that demand equal treatment of African Americans and women. The implications of this analogy will be exploited by those who are determined to stamp out every vestige of dissent. Rob, do you have a comment on that?
Well, yeah, and I think Justice Roberts made the same analysis, and he says this creates serious questions about religious liberty. Many good and decent people oppose same-sex marriage as a tenet of faith, and their freedom to exercise religion is, unlike the right imagined by the majority, actually spelled out in the Constitution. When marriage was refined democratically, citizens could accompany it with religious liberty protections, but the majority's decision imposing same-sex marriage cannot, of course, create any such accommodations. You know, it is alarming. This now changes the natural law, as we've talked about before, and I think it further suppresses religious rights and freedoms, and there could just be many unfortunate complications that are kind of come up and that we're going to see in the church. I mean, for example, what happens now in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church when a same-sex couple comes and visits and want to be married in the church? I mean, of course, my advice would be that we say no, but where is that going to take us in the future? We don't know the answer to that question.
And it is a vexing question. It's one that's not going away. We have a caller at the line, Larry from Delwood. Larry, what do you want to say, sir?
I have a couple quick points. First of all, I'd like to thank you for putting the panel together. It's very informative. Secondly, about 2,000 years ago, a 70-man blue ribbon panel condemned our Savior to the cross. He went willingly, but they had that ruling wrong, just as this Supreme Court has this ruling wrong. If you allow the Bible to interpret itself, God defines marriage, and he defines the sin of homosexuality in Genesis, Leviticus, Romans, and in 2 Timothy. And lastly, in the book of, in the Gospel of Matthew, it talks about something we haven't discussed yet, the division that's going to occur within Christian families that have members that are on the other side of this issue, and it's going to cause great division there. I'd like your comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Pastor D'Onofrio, what say you?
Well, Larry brings up a good point that God instituted marriage. We find this with Adam and Eve. He made man and woman, and he made them basically, you know, there's a lot of theological debate on this, but the idea that God pulled the woman from man and the feminine from the masculine, we now have two halves that come together as a whole in marriage. And so God created it this way. Along the way also, though, the Israelites wanted a king. And so God decided that we need to have two kingdoms when he allowed the Israelites. He said, they're going to tax you. They're going to conscript your kids into the military and all that kind of stuff. They said, well, all the cool kids have a king. We want one too. And so the two kingdoms are established here for God's people. And so we struggle to live in both kingdoms as faithful Christians and as faithful citizens at the same time. We struggle with this. And along the way, marriage became something that is regulated by the state. And so now we have to straddle this line as Christians. We walk the tightrope of being faithful to our God and yet good citizens by the state. Of course, we are not called to abide by sinful behavior or even to participate. You know, a lot of times we think as long as the government's not making us participate, sinners are going to be sinners and we shouldn't expect them to not be sinners. But in this case, this is one of those cases where we see a slippery slope where the church is going to start being impacted sooner or later by this, either by political correctness, which is also known as political cowardice, and we're going to be impacted deeply by this. Persecution is coming. To what extent in the United States, I don't know. Hopefully, no one's going to have their heads chopped off or anything like that, like in other countries right now where Christians are truly being physically persecuted. Divisions in family, we should expect nothing less for the sake of the gospel.
Well, I want to bring up a point. Again, I am not a minister. I'm strictly laity here. But I think Scripture has already answered the question for us about division within the family.
Mm-hmm.
It's our family.
Jesus made it pretty clear. Yeah,
we don't have to approve of what the family member does, but we do have to love them.
Yes.
And I think that's the answer to it. Rob, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. And I read an article recently. It's called Can We Make a Case for Marriage? It's written by actually my pastor, Pastor Warren Graff. It's an excellent article. You can find it on around the Word blog site. And it was written back in November of 2014 after the Windsor case, which was the striking of portions of the Defense of Marriage Act. And Pastor Graff makes an excellent argument that we can, you know, the essence of marriage, can we make the argument against same-sex marriages even outside of Scripture? And the Pastor Graff writes, marriage is not of the order of redemption. It's not, then, if we are speaking carefully of the revelation of Jesus Christ, for Jesus Christ is revealed to save sinners. Yet marriage was given before sin. Marriage belongs not to the order of redemption for which Scripture was given and is necessary, but to the order of creation, which places it not in the realm of revelation, but in the order of creation in terms of, in the realm of its natural law. And if we, I think that goes back to my beginning argument. I mean, I do agree with the biblical references, but when we're arguing this, we've got to take it, I think, out of the scriptural references, and we need to focus on this argument that what is marriage? Marriage unites two people in their most basic bodily forms. It's this one unity. The unity is found physically. And I think that's the starting language that we as Christians should use. And again, not get into this concept of commitment and love. But it is this idea of a physical unity that's used to procreate. And I think if that's the continued message, that's where we win the policy argument.
That website is aroundthewordjournal.com if you want to find that.
That's correct. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we have caller Mark on the line right now. Mark, you have a question for the panel. Mark, are you there? Well, I think we have lost Mark, unfortunately, but I believe we also have a caller, John, from Auburn, Alabama. John, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Very fine. Thank you, sir.
Good. Long-time listener. Used to, when we just recently relocated down to Auburn, used to live in Lincoln, Illinois, used to listen to the program all the time, love the show. The question that I have, and I wanted to throw out there, is since the Supreme Court did go ahead with this travesty and authorize the same-sex marriages, legality marriage, don't we as a church body, of course, given by this being, basically against our faith, don't we have the right, if a couple, same-sex couple, comes to the church and requests marriage, wedding vows, don't we have the right as a faith-based organization to say no, without legal ramification?
That's an interesting question. I'm going to pass it first to Craig D'Onofrio, who is a minister and can give us a theological answer on that. And then I'm going to ask Rob, in our attorney in New Mexico, for the legal definition of it. Craig?
Well, on the legal side, I'll let Rob speak to that. But as far as I know, at this point, the answer is still yes, but it may become no. But there are ways around that also. Once again, as I said before, I've always been uncomfortable as a pastor operating in the kingdom of grace, serving as a functionary of the state, operating in that kingdom of power, the kingdom of the other world there. And so when we struggle like this, we're going to have to find a common spot here where we're going to be able to function in a way that serves the gospel and serves Christ. We're going to have to probably send people off to the state to get them married up legally and then come to the church on Sunday. I would prefer Sunday morning during the divine service and bless that union in the church. And of course, as Lutheran Christians, we don't believe that marriage is a sacrament. So I think our Roman Catholic friends are going to have a very hard time with this, where marriage is a sacrament. And they pretty much will tell you that unless you're married in the church by a priest as a Roman Catholic, the legitimacy before God is questionable. And so we see that people who don't get married in the Roman Catholic Church, come in the Roman Catholic Church, can easily get an annulment because God doesn't recognize their marriage. So we're going to see a lot of this happening outside of our churches. I think ultimately, and what I'm most concerned with at this point is what President Harrison pointed out, what we've talked about, is our auxiliary ministries, the universities, charities, and so forth, where if we don't cater to this agenda, we may lose the nonprofit status.
Or we may even see our radio license being challenged.
Yeah.
So, Rob, I'm going to pass it to you now to get your interpretation on that, bearing in mind that Justice Thomas specifically addressed that issue, saying he thought it was inevitable that this was going to happen.
Well, I think that's right. I think there's two different ways to look at it. The caller's question is, what happens if, doesn't the church have it right to, to say, no, we're not going to marriage, we're not going to conduct a wedding here with two same-sex individuals. And I do think, I agree with Craig on that. I think that under the First Amendment, I'm going to read that to you. The First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, if your listeners will recall, recently we had the Hobby Lobby decision. And remember, Hobby Lobby had filed suit, and they were against the HHS mandate that these corporations had to provide contraception under their health care plans. And the court ruled on a 5-4 basis with Justice Kennedy, who authored this horrible decision on same-sex marriage, said, wait a minute, we have the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the Free Exercise Clause in the First Amendment. So under some that religious organizations can object to being forced to do certain things that go against their religious beliefs. So even though I see the argument, I do think under the Hobby Lobby case that at least for the time being and for some time, that the First Amendment is going to be recognized, and Justice Kennedy will come in and will join the majority saying that religious institutions shouldn't be forced to do something they don't want to do. But the other half is, I agree with Craig, which is a lot of the dissenters in this case, Justice Roberts and Justice Thomas and Alito, I believe, do say, well, there's other gray areas, like in the universities. What do we do on that? And I think that that's ultimately going to be litigated, and it'll be interesting to see. But I do believe if the same court were together when it reaches the Supreme Court, that the court will probably Kennedy will side with the majority in saying that religious institutions do have religious freedoms. But maybe I'm the optimistic one in this and hoping that our Supreme Court will follow its own language and its ruling in the Hobby Lobby case.
Okay, Rob, again, we want to invite our listeners to call in on this. In St. Louis, the call-in number is area code 314-821-0850. That's 314-821-0850. In North America, outside of the St. Louis area, our toll-free number is 1-800-730-2727. Once again, that's 1-800-730-2727. Now, we have Mark on the line from St. Louis, and he has a question for us. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, hello, Pastor Craig.
Hi.
Hello.
What's up, Mark?
Mark on Facebook. Question for you. Did the ruins... Now that the left has gone this far and gotten their agenda pushed across, since they've redefined marriage, does it limit it to two people now?
Interesting question.
I have a, if you don't mind, Craig, this is Rob here.
No, go for it, Rob.
I actually have, Justice Roberts does bring that as dissenting opinion. In fact, he says, one immediate question invited by the majority's position is whether states may retain the definition of marriage as a union of two people. Although the majority randomly asserts the adjective, quote, two in various places, it offers no reason at all why the two-person element of the core definition of marriage may be preserved while the man-woman element may not. The Chief Justice Roberts says, if you rely on the majority's opinion, that this also applies now to plural unions. And I think that's a very good point by Mark, that you bring that up. And in fact, Chief Justice Roberts says the way he's looking at it, that we're probably, the Constitution also allows plural marriages.
Interesting times. Going to go to another caller right now, Herman from Illinois. Herman, you have a question for the panel.
Yes, thank you, especially for your attorney. Over the years up to the present time, states have allowed pastors and clergy the discretion of their own exercise of religious freedom, whether or not they will perform a marriage, even if by the state's definition that man and woman are legally able to get married if that situation is not in agreement with their conscience and belief and or the church they represent. And does that still stand when it comes to a gay marriage situation?
Yeah, I think that's a question. I do believe, and I just talked about this a little bit on the Hobby Lobby case, which we do have a federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and it kind of emphasizes the First Amendment's right to exercise a religion. The majority of the justices in the Supreme Court now, even though Kennedy is the flip guy and he was the author of this horrible decision on the same-sex marriages, there are five on the court that do recognize religious freedoms, and I'm hoping, based on the language of the Hobby Lobby case, that will solidify the church's First Amendment right and pastors' First Amendment rights to decide whether they're going to perform a particular marriage or not. So I'm very hopeful on that. Is that something that could continue to be debated and deliberated and litigated down the road? Absolutely. But at this point in time, it's my opinion that the majority of the Supreme Court justices would rule in favor of the church on that issue.
You know, as I look at this from the pastoral side, and my rights as a pastor to say, well, look, you two aren't believers. You don't, you're living together outside of marriage. It appears that you have no interest in being part of the church, and yet you want the church to bless your union. As a pastor, I have a real hard time with that. But what I'm afraid of is that there will be activists who will come into the church, demand to be married. The pastor will say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Then litigation ensues, and even if the church wins under the First Amendment, the church is put under financially because they're just deep-pocketed to death. And I'm so thankful that there are attorneys like Rob out there and organizations that he works with who do this kind of work for the sake of the church and for the sake of moral law, natural law. But I'm really afraid that this is going to turn into a deep pockets issue, that even if the church is exonerated in the long run, many of our congregations will be put under financially.
Well, Rob, we've already seen this where groups have been targeted. For example, your client, Elaine Photography, the florist in Washington. We saw that with a restaurant out in Ohio, another one down in Texas that's been driven into bankruptcy. It seems to me that there is definite targeting already going on. Is this what you're seeing?
There is, and in fact, I have argued from day one on the photography case here in that happened in New Mexico. That was set up by the left. You can read the emails going back and forth from the same-sex marriage couple with the photographer, and I mean they're really setting them up. But the good thing is there are a number of nonprofit organizations out there. For example, the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. Now, of course, we Lutherans wouldn't believe everything that some of their clients believe. I mean, they've represented all types of religious clients. But the good part about it is that they are funds. They're 501c, probably 501c4 corporations that are nonprofit that have their on in-house lawyers that are very good, that's all they do is come in and for free represent these companies. They'll file. I know they, in this case, they didn't represent any of the defendants, but they did file what's called amicus briefs. They've got excellent lawyers. So there are some very good nonprofit funds out there that do fight for religious liberties, which I think is good, and they're very helpful.
We're running very low on time right now, just a little bit more than a minute left, so I think we're going to wrap this up. Craig, do you have any last-minute thoughts? Again, I'm looking to you as a pastor.
Yeah. Two things real quick. The gates of hell will never prevail against the church. We may be persecuted. We may lose our tax-exempt status, but the gospel, the work of Jesus Christ, will continue. What man means for evil, God uses for good. I can't help but to think the average wedding today is more than $28,000. And as a pastor, I can tell you the church, the pastor, the holiness of marriage is one of the last things in most weddings that occurs. I think that this is an opportunity for the church to step back and say, look, weddings are about marriage. Marriage is between a man and a woman. It gives us a chance to reassess things. Kip?
Rob, your final thoughts? You've only got about 30 seconds remaining. So
yes, I mean, this is a tragic decision, but there's a lot of dissent, and I think it continues the discussions, and I think that if we can focus on marriage outside of a commitment relationship, but we talk about it from a natural law perspective, that man and woman were married, we're supposed to be married as opposed to man and a man, just because of the physical nature and the, and procreation. If we can keep the argument there, I still believe that we can still push these agendas, and maybe there'll be a constitutional amendment someday.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank Rob Daugherty, who has been the attorney talking about this issue. I want to thank the Reverend Matthew Harrison, President of Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and of course, my co-host, Craig D'Onofrio. I'm Kip Allen. I'm the host for this program, and God bless you all. We'll keep you abreast of what's going on.